AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media
News,
app.
News, I'm Andy Field. Leaving a more than two-hour contentious Republican conference meeting, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy now floating a two-week clean short-term funding bill with no attachments that would keep the federal government from shutting late tomorrow night. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
The Senate is advancing a bipartisan short-term funding bill, and it's crucial that the House Republicans also do their jobs and move quickly to keep the government open.
The first plea deal in the former President Trump Georgia election interference case involves a co-defendant, bail bondsman Scott Hall. He pleads guilty to misdemeanors, pays a fine, community service, and agrees to testify against others. They have arrested Dwayne Keefe D. Davis and charged him with the nearly 30-year-old murder of rapper Tupac Shakur in Las Vegas. United Auto Workers strike expanding again, this time to factories in Chicago and Lansing, Michigan. This is ABC News. First Bruce Springsteen and now Aerosmith, Steve Tyler's voice forcing them to delay that band's final tour for now.
It's going to take Aerosmith a bit longer to say peace out. The band now postponing all of their peace out tour for 2023 to 2024. This because Steven Tyler has now fractured his larynx and needs to heal. The news comes after the band had already postponed dates because of Tyler's vocal cord damage. Tyler says in a statement that he's heartbroken, but promises to be back as soon as possible. That'll be next year at the earliest. The peace out tour is billed as Aerosmith's final tour. Jason Nathanson, ABC News. Hollywood.
Tennessee judge today ended the conservatorship between former NFL player Michael Orr and the couple that took him in as a teenager. It is the story behind the popular book and movie The Blind Side. 37-year-old Orr claims the couple falsely claimed they were his adoptive parents. Orr also claims he didn't get a fair share of profits from his life story. Andy Field, ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. The Eau Claire Police Department has announced another arrest in connection to a homicide. According to a press release, the Eau Claire Police Department arrested 28-year-old Jamon Sullivan in connection with a homicide that occurred on September 17th of last year near the intersection of Bergen Avenue and Bellevue Avenue. Sullivan was charged with first-degree intentional homicide as a party to a crime. The incident is still under investigation and no other details have been released at this time. The Wisconsin State Senate's Sporting Heritage Committee voted against confirming four of Governor Tony Evers' appointees to the Department of Natural Resources Policy Board. The Republican-controlled committee voted 3-2 against confirmation for each appointee. Much of the questions and contentions revolved around the agency's wolf management plan, which does not include a hard population cap. The current wolf management plan caps the number of wolves in the state at 350. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Under the helmet with the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Jordan Love was 15 for 27 for 245 yards and 3 TDs against a JV team.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't like Chicago, but I ain't going to call them a JV team. They suck, but it's a slap in the face. Okay. I'm laughing at y'all Bear fans.
I know, man.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger with Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday mornings at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Green Bay Packers call Lambeau Field home, but did you know the stadium has a history all its own? It started with where to build it. Residents on both sides of the city wanted it. Officials argued there had to be room for growth. Eventually, farmland was purchased, but in Ashwaubenon. The bargaining continued, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Green Bay City Stadium became a reality the following year and was renamed in honor of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau in 1965. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Aaron comes in every day looking like he just stepped out of a Turkish bathhouse because it's so hot in there. Just to recap, so far this segment has been filled with dog vomit, old men peeing, and Aaron wearing a dish towel. So we're...
Hey man, your name's on the show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Dig out your lederhosen. It's time for Oktoberfest in La Crosse, September 28th through the 30th. 3 days featuring German food and beer, Stein races, barrel rolling, and the best in live music. polka bands. Celebrate the friendliest fest in the Midwest, Oktoberfest in La Crosse, Thursday through Saturday, September 28th to the 30th at the Oktoberfest grounds. Find more information at OktoberfestUSA.com. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to Hot Gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
News and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you know how our Republican friends in Congress love to attack the IRS because Joe Biden's hiring 87,000 IRS agents in here. They're coming to kick down your door. I saw a report today that nearly 1,000 tax filers who make more than $1 million a year still haven't filed their taxes for the period 2017 through 2020. Now they've got extensions and they've got, you know, legal people to help, you know, push that off down the road so that they don't have to pay. I mean, that's kind of what it is. I got to wonder, you know, with a shutdown, you know, how much more difficult does it get for the IRS to go after these folks and go, hey, deadbeats, pay your tax bill like every working person has to. Well, here to answer that question and, well, some of our other tax questions, I've asked our good friend Matthew Gardner to come talk with us. Matthew's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. ITEP.org is their website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm sure you saw this story as well, that you've got these 1,000 people who are very wealthy, $1 million a year, still not filed their tax returns. I got to assume that's going to get worse if we have a shutdown.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The thing we know from years and years of data, and this latest IRS release is only the latest indicator of this, is that the single biggest consequence of the IRS underfunding we've seen for the past decade, the last 20 years, is that the very wealthy individuals, the big corporations, have been emboldened to try all sorts of things, ranging from claiming dubious tax breaks to filing late to, as it turns out, not filing at all, because they know there's an increased chance they can get away with it. So, and the tragedy of it, of course, is that we are right now, thanks to the legislation passed in the last year by President Biden, on our track to funding the IRS adequately for the first time in all this time, for the first time in the 21st century. And that would absolutely be one of the victims, certainly not the main victim, but an important victim of any government shutdown.
You know, here's the thing. And you were talking about not filing a tax return. And I'm going, you know, if a working person, you know, somebody who shows up to work and punches a clock every day and earns their wages, if they didn't file their tax return, boy, I'm sure the IRS would be there and, you know, with bells on coming to get them and, you know, cuffs and beautiful shiny bracelets, but someone making $1 million a year, well, you know, that's a little more complicated.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to remember. The baseline level of enforcement that the IRS can do, even with its sharply reduced budget, is the kind that doesn't cost as much, which is making sure that low and middle income folks who have fairly straightforward income profiles, right? We have wages, that's what we have. That those guys are paying their taxes. Where it gets harder, but where it also becomes way more important fiscally, is auditing the very rich who have far more complicated income arrangements and auditing big corporations. Either way, you know, the IRS can lose all the additional money it got in the Inflation Reduction Act. We're still going to see that baseline level of enforcement on low-income families because it's the cheapest thing to do.
Yeah.
It's the thing the IRS can do without adequate funding. But absolutely, the situation we're seeing right now where we have 1,000 people, millionaires, who literally cannot be bothered to file their income taxes going back, 5 years? That's going to get a lot worse. That's going to be the impact if either we shut down or we avoid a shutdown by allowing the Freedom Caucus to get their wish of defunding the IRS.
And, you know, again, this benefits the very well. And I say this all the time. The chaos that Republicans, levy on our government pays off dividends for the very well-to-do because they don't want government regulation. They don't want to pay taxes. They don't want oversight. They don't want any of the things that our government does. So a shutdown, chaos, you know, the kind of things we've seen the last several years plays right into their hands. And look, I look at, you know, you guys put out a piece the other day, Trump's only legislative accomplishment was that tax scam, tax heist that they did back in 2017, 2018. And billionaires got 77% richer. Now, you know, I'm talking to average everyday working people. And I'm going, why aren't we losing our minds over the fact that billionaires got 77% richer and we've all gotten poorer because inflation keeps going up and prices keep going up so we can feed this monster?
Well, I think one way of answering that is that people are getting angry about this. We know that if there's one thing people can agree on about our tax system right now, it's that big corporations and the very best off American individuals aren't paying enough, that these folks need to be the focus of increased tax hikes if we do them. But there's another indicator that people are fed up with it, and it's a far more dangerous one, I think, which is that we're reaching sort of a crisis of legitimacy with our institutions. Nobody believes that our elected officials have their interests at heart. Nobody believes in the Supreme Court anymore, right? Like all of our important institutions, there's the baseline level of trust in these things has gone down. And I think that is that's the way this is sort of manifesting itself, this dislike people have for the way our policies are going.
They recognize that these policies
aren't being enacted with their interest in mind.
Let me pose this as a question then, because, you know, I get this all the time. You're exactly right. I hear it from people all the time that, you know, the Supreme Court is bought and paid for. Congress is bought and paid for. Is this a both sidesism thing? Is this, you know, a Republican Party that is it all? Where do you put the blame?
Depends which institution you're talking about. With Congress, I mean, I think it's not heretical, it's not crazy to say that the root of all problems is money and the fact that we have a privately funded system of paying for elections, which means inherently that all our elected officials, whatever their party is, the basic incentive is there for them to listen first and foremost to the people who have the most money and whose interests are most clearly affected by their policy. That's rich people and corporations. The incentive for them to listen to the rest of us, as disorganized and moneyless as we are, it's just not there.
Yeah.
So I think that's, in that sense, it's bipartisan. Now, you talk about the Supreme Court. There, I think we're seeing a sea level change. Trust in the Supreme Court hasn't been an issue for a long time, since the Great Depression, in the way that it is right now. And it's because we are seeing a dramatic shift in the way the Supreme Court is making decisions and the sort of things it's taking on, whether it's Roe v. Wade or some of these more recent tax cases.
Yeah, you bring up the tax case. There's this Moore versus U.S. Case that's coming up, I guess, later this year. There's going to be, it's going to be heard by the Supreme Court. I've heard things all over the map on this. I want to get your take. What is it, and what if the court decides the wrong way, what does it mean?
Right. Well, on its face, this isn't a big deal. There's a business owner from Washington State who got a $15,000 bill from the IRS because of the Trump tax law changes, and didn't want to pay it. And so they took it to court, and here we are at the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, the fact that this got to the Supreme Court says that there's a lot more behind it. And in fact, what's behind it is this. The $15,000 bill that this person was mad about was from something called the transition tax, which was a one-time tax, one of the few revenue raisers, by the way, in the otherwise atrocious Trump tax cuts. This thing was designed to impose a one-time toll tax on the mountains of offshore cash that big multinationals had, right? If you remember back in 2017, the big problem was we knew that all these companies, Microsoft, Google, the tech and the pharma, all these guys were shifting their profits offshore on paper to avoid paying U.S. tax on them.
Right.
And so when we went to this territorial tax system in 2017, we gave up on the project forever of taxing this foreign income. But we decided we had to have some minimal level of tax on that old pre-2017 offshore income. And we're talking $2.5 trillion of untaxed income, most of which should have been in the U.S. So we did a one-time 15% tax. You know, it's a sweetheart deal. That was the transition tax. And so the $15,000 is the share of it that this one business owner had. But our new report shows that, in fact, there's a huge, huge, it's the tip of the iceberg. What we're really talking about here is up to $340 billion of tax revenue, of which a gigantic share was paid by just a few of the very biggest companies. We're talking, we identified 380 companies that disclosed paying some of this tax. Fully a third of it was paid by just five companies. Wow. That's $90 billion for Apple, Microsoft, Google, J&J, and Pfizer. Just those guys. Which means if this case goes bad, the simple way would be these guys get their $15,000 back. The next step would be, and it's an entirely possibility, is that the entire transition tax, not just their share, is ruled unconstitutional, which means Apple, Pfizer, Microsoft, J&J, and Facebook get their Google, get their $90 billion back. That a $270 billion hole gets blown in the federal budget at a time when we can't afford it. There's an even bigger concern, believe it or not, which is forward thinking. If you think about the universe of tax reforms, progressive tax reforms that folks have been coalescing around that seem to have some promise for undoing the inequities in our tax code, number one on the list is a wealth tax. Elizabeth Warren's been talking it up. Bernie's been talking it up. We're seeing it now at the state level in a half a dozen states as a real possibility. That possibility goes away if this Moore case goes the wrong way. And the reason, I won't go into it forever, but the argument they're making is that you can't tax income at the federal level unless it's been realized. That is, unless you get a check. Otherwise, it doesn't count as income. That's not really a principle that's governed our tax system. And in fact, if the realization principle gets enforced, as the Morris, this family want to do, we'd be springing a dozen holes in every major tax levied at the federal level, which means, because states depends on the federal government, we have real problem with state governments as well. I said in a thing I wrote the other day that this might be the most fiscally consequential Supreme Court decision in U.S. history. And, you know, inflation adjusted, who knows, right? But they ruled the income tax unconstitutional 100 something years ago, but it would be huge. And again, at a time when we couldn't afford to lose even the $15,000, let alone the $350 billion we're talking about here.
Wow. That's enormous. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Matthew Gardner. He's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. If you want to check out their website, itep.org. Anything going in front of the Supreme Court right now, it's tainted with all kinds of billionaire money and allegations of, you know, lobbying and payoffs. Anything in this any inconveniences for our nine in the robes?
Well, there is for at least two of them. Roberts and Alito, it turns out, each have substantial stock holdings in companies that would benefit from a repeal of this transition tax. to the tunes of billions of dollars. So, you know, their share of it wouldn't be gigantic, but it's clearly, it's as clear a conflict of interest as you'll ever see. I mean, if there was a Chief Justice Microsoft, it might be a little bit clearer, but you know, it's not at all hard to see the impropriety of this. And yeah, so this is coming at a time, as I said before, when the perceived legitimacy of the Supreme Court is at an all-time low. This flood of ethical lapses and scandals and just a complete lack of concern for public perception that we've seen from the court the last year or so, this could make it a lot worse. So yeah, it's even absent this, it's a case that could really blow a hole in our federal budget. But the notion that Supreme Court justices might be making such a decision in a way that benefits themselves personally, I think could be catastrophic for the legitimacy of the institution.
I agree. But, you know, a lot of what's been going on there has been just mind-boggling. You know, Alito and his bizarre defense in the newspaper, and you know, Thomas, all of the long line of payoffs that, wow, it's not good. It's not good. So when does this get heard? When is there a calendar date? Do we have an idea of when so we can start preparing?
Well, one thing we know about Supreme Court justices is that they do what they want when they want to. But the thought is that we'll have a decision before the end of the year, November maybe. Yeah. Right now, a lot of organizations, anti-tax organizations, are submitting their amicus briefs, you know, their friend of the court briefs, where they explain their rationale for why we shouldn't have a tax system anymore. But you know, they're going to be looking at that stuff over the next few weeks, and I think hearing it sometime starting in October. So we should know a lot of things by the end of the year.
Well, we'll see how that goes, and I expect you'll come back and share with us what happens at the hearing, and possibly if a decision and when a decision, what that's going to mean, and all of that. But Matthew, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff, Matthew Gardner. Make sure you check out their website, itep.org. He's a senior fellow there at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I think about a friend who was a congressman years ago. And one of the things he told me, you know, look, no one's ever bought my vote. But I got to raise money. So you get my ear 15 minutes at a time. And he goes, look, the people who are writing the checks, they all have similar wants and needs. It's all well coordinated. And this is back, you know, this is back 15 years ago. It's gotten so much worse. And this is why I'm a supporter of publicly funded elections. I think you get X amount of dollars to run an election. If you can get, you know, people to come in and volunteer time, that's great. I'm in favor of, you know, small, you know, matching donations from individuals. We should be banning corporate money. We should be banning PACs and super PACs and all of that stuff. Because the big moneyed interests get what they want all the time. And this tax thing could be huge. I mean, you know, as Matthew was talking, my mind goes to, so let me get this straight. Because if you remember, you know, you had all these big companies hoarding money overseas, mostly in the Caymans or in Ireland or places that had no, they were tax havens. And you had this one-time repatriation fee. And, you know, they were saying, oh, look how much money we brought in. Now, this could potentially undo all of that. And do you think that they kind of knew that this is the direction that they were going to go? Because I don't believe the moneyed interests do anything haphazardly. I don't believe the right does anything without really gaming it out. This is the one thing I give them credit for. They built an incredibly powerful state policy network. They got think tanks in every state. They've got, you know, giant, capacity for intellectual damage. They have the ability to game out horrible stuff for working people, and they've been very successful. And this tax thing is still part of it. And I go back to what George Carlin said years and years ago. He said, look, you know, the rich, you know, take all the money, pay none of the taxes. The working class, the middle class pays all of the taxes, does all the work. And the poor are there to scare the middle class to showing up to the crummier and crummier jobs. There has never been a more succinct, accurate statement, in my view, than that one. And now they're going to destroy our ability to make investments, to take care of people. I mean, it's maddening when you stop and think about it, the direction we're going as a country because of the enormous wealth that's being accumulated. And it's only going to get worse. Trust me, this is only going to get worse as technology comes online, as we start losing more and more jobs. I was just reading an article that FedEx is looking at doing away with their dock workers because they've got AI who can load and unload the trucks. They've got robotics who can come in and do all the work that right now people are doing. And eventually there's going to be a point where working people have no work. And this is, I keep saying, you know, our politicians are so far behind the curve. And that's on purpose. Republicans have gummed the system up for so long. I mean, this is not new. You know, during the Obama years, how many times did we have, you know, near shutdowns and chaos? I mean, it was like a bad season of 24. You know, every time you turn around, there's a ticking bomb. You know, society's on the brink of being eviscerated by crazy Republicans who want to hold the country hostage for more cuts so that they could take food out of the mouths of children to give rich people tax breaks. That is the reality of the Republican Party. Literally stealing food out of the mouths of children so that we can give more tax breaks to the very wealthy. And this thing that the ITEP put out is just remarkable. 77% our billionaire class got richer because of the Trump tax scheme. How much wealthier did you get? Remember that tax cut that you were supposed to get? Did you get it? The answer is no. And because of the Trump tax scheme, our wealth class added another $2.2 trillion in wealth. And that's on top of the $3.9 trillion in wealth that they added because of the pandemic. You seeing a pattern here? You're getting robbed. You're getting ripped off every day. And then we're being told the people who are trying to fight back, those workers who are on strike, those Teamsters who are going to go on strike, the restaurant workers in Las Vegas who are about to go on strike, they're the problem. They're not the problem. They're the solution. And again, I go back to what Sean Fain said where I started today. I go back to that comment that he made of, look, we've got to take on corporate greed. He said, we're fed up with corporate greed. We're fed up with corporate excess. We're fed up with breaking our bodies for companies that take more and more and give less and less. Our anger is righteous. Our struggle is just. he's spot on accurate. And we had better wake up to that soon, because technology is coming fast. This is coming. There's no, hey, we can slow. No, it's coming. And we're behind. So all of this chaos, all of these shutdowns, all of the impeachment inquiry, all this craziness is nothing more than stall tactics for us to get ahead of the curve. Because once we're behind, we never catch up. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1789. That was the day that the United States Congress officially created the United States Army. Not everyone agreed that the U.S. should have a standing army. 2 years earlier, at the meeting that drafted the U.S. Constitution, James Madison warned against a permanent federal army. He told those at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, quote, "A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." Since Madison was a strong proponent of a centralized federal government, his caution about the army was noteworthy. Perhaps these warnings is why it took Congress until the last day of their session to finally approve the measure. In fact, President George Washington had to write Congress not once, but twice to get them to act on the issue. Once it was approved, the first standing army had about 800 members. By comparison, in 2015, the army had just under 500,000 active duty soldiers. To supplement the small army, Congress also made a provision for the president to call up troops from state militias. The stated purpose for such call-ups was, quote, "protecting the inhabitants of the frontiers of the United States from hostile incursions of the Indians." While in federal service, the state militias were supposed to receive, quote, "the same as the pay and substance as the regular army." One time, various state militias were used for the forced removal of the Cherokee people from the southeast on the Trail of Tears in the 1830s. State militias were also deployed to break up labor strikes, such as the case in the Homestead Strike in Pennsylvania in 1892. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
When megalomaniac multi-billionaire barons of industry suddenly announce that they are boundless geniuses who must remake society, government, and nature, perk up and pay attention. Their grand schemes of social engineering almost always go badly for us non-billionaires. Having spent their careers in the top-down, self-aggrandizing, exploitative corporate culture, they invariably turn to techno solutions and AI computer models, ignoring such bothersome factors as human dynamics. So look out, for here comes a gaggle of high-tech billionaires from Silicon Valley planning to fix America's cities by building an urban utopia from scratch. They've chosen Solano County, northeast of San Francisco, for their startup city, promoting it as a hybrid of technotopia and European urbanity, free from the gritty realities of, you know, real cities. Their plan, however, did not include informing the people currently living there about their scheme. Instead, they dispatched secret armies of lawyers and developers to snap up the area's rich farmland, preparing to surprise the locals by converting their land, community, and culture into the gabillionaires' experiment in new urbanism. One of the moneyed schemers declared that, quote, "the idea is simple. Found new cities, free from old bureaucratic and legal structures, and explore bold new visions of how government should work." But that's not simple. It's simplistic. Also, wholly anti-democratic and un-American. But it's in keeping with the egomaniacal ejaculations of other self-indulgent richies who want to build cities that float on oceans, that orbit in space, or that are built on Mars. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's send all of them there now. Meanwhile, what if more of our billionaires invested their money in funding real solutions to real problems in the real cities America already has?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, California Senator Dianne Feinstein passed today. And, you know, now it puts Gavin Newsom in an interesting spot. Which, who does he appoint? Which direction does he go? You know, because there's a, you know, there's a primary challenge going on. There are a bunch of Democrats running to fill her seat. We'll see. We'll see what takes us. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on maybe Bob's got some stories about Senator Feinstein. That's why I've asked my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So did you know the senator?
Yes, served with her in the sense that she was in the Senate. I was in the House, but she was there a long time, as Senator Biden was, and, you know, and McConnell. But I didn't, you know, I wasn't a social dinner guest, but I talked to her through on occasion. I think the really neat thing about Senator Feinstein was the fact that, you know, she was the first female chair of two big committees, which is Intel and also chair of rules. And the Intel is the one I'd stress, too, because where I think internally, at least in the Senate, she had the most respect was the fact that she didn't wasn't known to tinker politically with Intel. If you're on the Intel committee and, you know, it, people start to perceive, you know, they've got some political agenda or something, then, you know, it causes a lot of constraint, you know, and anger each side. But I think Feinstein did a good job on sharing it. It's sad how, you know, how things are. It's sad how she's remembered how she left, but she should be remembered for the, you know, a lot of things that she did.
Yeah. What do you think, which direction do you think Newsom goes?
Well, he put himself into a box in the sense of, you know, the quote that he was going to, he committed that he was going to appoint an African-American woman. Now, that's not a box where you say, well, you know, why are you saying that? But also that appointment would be a card holder, a placeholder. And that's a problem, because then he has to find somebody who says publicly, yes, I'm not running, you know. In one way, though, it solves a problem for him because he doesn't have to go in between several primary
right.
candidates.
So yeah,
he's almost, he has to go outside the people in the primary, I would assume.
Well, we'll see where that goes, because, you know, the race between Schiff and Porter, I'm told, is very close.
Yes, I think so.
I'm pulling for Katie Porter, but,
choose,
you know? I like Adam Schiff, but I'm pulling for Katie Porter. I got to get your thoughts on RFK Jr. launching an independent bid. Who does this hurt more? Does this hurt Biden or Trump more?
I think it hurts Biden more. I do. Not that RFK is a player within the Democratic circles. We all know that. In fact, it's kind of funny, Rick. You have friends who, they don't follow politics, but they follow names or whatever. And when this first started, I had friends of mine that said, oh, RFK is going to be, wow, you know, this is going to be a very divisive primary with Biden. And I'm like, no.
No.
They said, why not? I said, because RFK.
Because he's a kook.
I'm going to be politer. RFK is different. Even and he has attacked me. He's got a conspiracy. I'm part of one of his conspiracy theories.
Oh, do tell.
If you Google. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I was shopping one night. And what's the guy that did the Shawshank Redemption? Tim Robbins.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm shopping one night in a store in Ohio, and I get this phone call, and my friend's like in this panic. Tim Robbins is on TV attacking you. On, I think it was the Bill Maher show. He's attacking you. I'm like, okay. I'm out of office by this time. In fact, I'm doing your show, you know, at that time. And I said, for what? And he said, conspiracy theory, you rigged the Bush election. I said, if I rigged the Bush election, there's two things. One, I wouldn't have went into the Bush housing program known as prison. Or two, I would have really a wonderful Swiss bank account, of which I have neither of those. So RFK came up with a theory that I had gotten Diebold, and through the Help America Vote Act, he put aside, you know, Steny Hoyer is,
yeah.
And Ted Kennedy, his uncle, was sponsors of the bill. He put that aside. Yeah, he came up with a whole conspiracy theory that I had fixed the election for Bush in 2004.
Wow. Yeah, it's easy to put Teddy Kennedy away.
But I think that, if anything, this election, if it's Trump and Biden, then it becomes so tight that, look, anybody can make a difference. But then again, there are people that can make the difference against Trump, too. You know?
Yeah, because I'm not sure how RFK breaks. I'll be honest with you. He's on all the kook side of things that would some people on the right would be attracted to.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so that's why I wanted to get your thought, because my mind is in this weird spot, because he's really on the kook train that could attract some of those people who just don't like the Trump stuff. We'll see.
Thought about that. You're right. He could attract a little bit from maybe each side. I don't think he's a kingmaker.
No.
As if Manchin were in this or something. But yes, he can do a little damage here and a little damage there.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the impeachment. It was quite nothing. I mean, when your three witnesses say, well, there's nothing, kind of makes you go, anything?
Well, yeah, this is one I kind of called wrong, in the sense, and it'll develop, the American public are fluid, but when this all started, I had messaged a couple of people I know on the Republican side in D.C. in the House, and I just said, this is, because they said, what do you think? I said, dumb political move, dumb. You're going to take yourselves off target. You don't know what you've got yet to, launch this. And then I read releases of the moderate Republicans, which were, I must say, pretty well done, walking in between, saying we don't know what's going to happen. It's simply an inquiry, trying to downplay it. And then I saw some of the polling, which was, again, I want to stress this can change, but I saw some of the polling that people were like, yeah, okay, it's okay to inquire. A great percentage of people. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that because this first hearing happened, that those same people that said it's okay to inquire, doesn't mean they won't change their mind and say, okay, you inquired, now what?
Yeah.
There is nothing. So, I don't think this was the firecracker start, obviously, to anything.
No, and I mean, they use doctored text messages. You got, Nancy Mace, saying that we know he did it, and you go, okay, prove it. And now she's got, she did a bizarre video. I don't know if you saw this, but she did one of those walking bizarre videos where evidently Joe Biden's in a prostitution ring. Somehow he's involved in a prostitution ring. I'm going, for a guy who's always sleeping, he sure gets a lot done.
In D.C., if you listen to the conspiracy theories, I don't think anybody in D.C. in the Capitol would be working. They'd all be on, some island or some room somewhere.
All orgies.
Exactly.
But I did want to ask you about something, because you brought up about the Swiss bank account. Someone told me the other day, and again, I get this all the time, and we have this conversation every once in a while, about the lavish pensions and the lavish health care and all the stuff that members of Congress get. How long do you have to be in Congress to get a pension?
Well, you vest in 5 years. And let me answer the health care question. 6 years ago, December, I think it was the 30th, it'll be 7 years coming up, I had a heart attack.
Yep.
That heart attack cost me $66,000. Because I didn't have health care. I'm going to be a walking testament to the fact that health care is not automatic. You have to be in the system. You have to have, bought it. You have to have a plan. I was 3 months short, unfortunately, of Medicare. Now, the whole deal about you get your salary, serve one term, you get your salary, your kids get this, your kids get that. Now, if you pass away in office, yes, your family will get the remainder of your term, will get the salary payment, and then you carry, insurance policies yourself. You need 5 years to vest, but you have to put into the system. And when people say, it's lavish. Now, in the good old days, years back, and somebody served 25 years, yes, they could come out with a fairly healthy pension. But now you put in to the pension, and if you served, say, 10 years, and you based on your salary and you put something in the pension, your payment out would be about, if you didn't take it early, $2,200 a month would be about what it would be if you put in a decade. Now, if you put in Strom Thurmond years, you know, and yeah, those pensions are going to be higher. In fact, if they would retire, they probably would get more, you know, in the long run. So it depends on how many years you have. Yeah. But the idea that you retire and you get your salary, that is absolutely not true.
Yeah, there's so much out there that's just crazy. But now I got to get your thoughts on the shutdown. Evidently, it's coming. I still don't know why we're in this mess. But any thoughts?
Sure. We're in this mess because there are 20 people. I think 8 could be, you know, gotten to in the sense of cooperating with the speaker. But there are basically 20 people, 12 hardcore, and of course the ringleader, Matt Gaetz, who wants to do other things in his life, and, you know, he'll utilize this. But I think this core group of 12 to 14, 15 people are people who, at the end of the day, they don't care if the Republicans have the majority in Congress. They care either about themselves or they want to be in the minority because you don't have to govern.
Yeah.
You can just go crazy and complain all day and make up conspiracy theories. You don't have to govern. And if you look back at the Gingrich Clinton years, because I was part, you know, of that shutdown at that particular time, and Clinton did a veto, and Clinton blinked a little bit, and we blinked a little bit, and we had, you know, balanced budgets. But this is not that scenario. This has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Zero. Has nothing to do with the Senate. This is all Republican, internal war, and it's a circular firing squad that McCarthy has zero control over. And eventually, they're going to move to vacate his seat. And at some point in time, McCarthy is going to have to govern. And by governing, you got to reach out to the other side, yep, throw out a bill. If half the Republicans like it, okay. If half the Democrats like it, okay. Otherwise, this is going to be a dysfunctional speakership from here all the way through. And, of course, Rick, and I'll end this rant by saying this. If they keep it up, the Democratic side has to just sit, have a mantra about working people and yep, the economy, et cetera, and they will take the House back.
No, this is what I've been saying. Don't do anything to save them.
Don't do anything.
Let them give them just enough rope to hang themselves.
Well, and if they do save them, they're still going to vacate the seat and then go after him with the vengeance. McCarthy can't win. Oh, he'll probably get something temporarily, maybe, you know, for a few days, and then he'll pass all these outrageous bills, which I love doing, you know, the appropriations as you're supposed to, but they're going to be outrageous appropriation bills. And then
yeah,
you've got one choice, up or down, because the Senate is not going to go along with it, probably including Republicans.
So last question, do we shut down tomorrow?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. There was no doubt in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, if as we speak, if they tonight at midnight, if they craft something, I don't think they can technically get it done into form. Plus, somebody will object to suspending the the reading or the rule, and that's where they got a problem. So they'll technically shut down. Now, if he can get a 3-day extension, then the extension starts Sunday. Nobody really is affected, but it will be a technical shutdown.
Oh boy. Again, as I've been saying, this is no way to run a lemonade stand, but Bob,
this
I appreciate
it.
What's that?
This may go on a while. Remember, it took 15 votes to get him in there.
always McCarthy. The eternal yeah, optimist. I appreciate the time, and I hope you have a wonderful time in Kashmir. Good for you, and I look forward to hearing
Kashmir
from you when you get
back. Okay.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this, stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. Canadian coal miners, their wives, and children marched through the streets of Estevan, Saskatchewan. The miners were on strike for union recognition and better pay and working conditions. Safety was a major concern for the 600 men and boys who worked in the mines. Water collected in many work areas. Too often, the mine companies failed to replace rotting timber, so roof cave-ins were frequent. Inadequate ventilation led to high concentrations of carbon dioxide. For braving this dangerous underground work, the miners earned only 25 cents for each ton of coal. The miners had joined the Mine Workers Union of Canada earlier that year. They called a strike in September, but coal mine operators refused to meet their demands. Miners and their families decided to demonstrate in the town of Estevan to gain community support. The mayor banned the demonstration and called upon the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to crush the march. The Mounties met several hundred miners and their families and attempted to block the procession. They opened fire on the unarmed crowd. Three striking miners were killed, and many others were wounded and arrested. Finally, on October 6th, the mine owners finally agreed to an 8-hour workday and a minimum wage of $4 a day. But they refused to recognize the union. It was not until the end of World War II that the United Mine Workers finally won recognition in the Saskatchewan coal fields. The strike remains a controversial event in Estevan. The three miners who were killed have the inscription "Murdered by RCMP" on their headstones. Over the years, locals have alternately erased and restored these inscriptions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at laborhistoryin2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Let's quick go to the phones. We've got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you, buddy? It helps when he's on air.
FK is basically a crazy person who comes from political royalty in this country. You know, if his name's not Kennedy, nobody gives a damn what he thinks. But, you know, we give a great deal of deference to that family. I mean, there's an entire generation that's in love with them, a couple of generations, I would argue. So it is possible that somebody in America, you know, because of their love of the Kennedys, says that, you know, I'm going to cast a vote for Kennedy, not knowing just how crazy he is. I don't know whether that breaks for Joe Biden or for Trump. Who could say at this point? Because, you know, he said some things that might appeal to certain people on the left, and then also others on the right, you know. So, again, don't know where we stand with him. He's a wild card. I do know that given the likelihood of the small margins in certain swing states, you know, a third-party candidate could make a difference. Who's to say? That's the only concern I think a lot of us have with regard to someone like RFK. And then also, in terms of the shutdown, your guest pretty much nailed it. Yes, you know, McCarthy made a deal with the devil in order to get elected speaker on the 15th ballot. Let's not forget all the drama that transpired. You know, he and Matt Gaetz going back and forth, Marjorie Taylor Greene on the phone with Donald Trump, supposedly all of this back and forth. And okay, so he finally gets in, except this is a house that's built out of straw. Anything can tear it down. And these people came for their pound of flesh that they were promised by McCarthy, and now they want, you know, to exercise some kind of power. They realize that they have a disproportional amount of power, these 20-odd people, as compared to anybody else in Congress, and they want to exercise that power. I think your guest is right. Most of them want just to move on to some crazy position in post their careers in the Congress in some conservative capacity. Who knows? A gig at Fox or, you know, who knows, some other outlet, you know, some YouTube gig, who knows. But they just don't care. They have no sense of responsibility to the country and what this can do. A shutdown of the United States government affects the international economy, not just ours. And it's never come out well for the party that forced the shutdown. Every time that this has happened, you know, and Republicans have pushed us to this. Democrats don't do this. Democrats don't threaten to shut down the government and act like children. You know, and there's a question as to whether or not even it's even legal, but we'll set that aside for a moment. And you've got these people who are behaving like children who were threatening to shut down the government. And when and after the shutdown, guess what? When it happened during Bill Clinton's administration, it benefited Bill Clinton. I don't know what they think they're going to get out of it because they're not going to benefit their party. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy is torn because he feels as if he doesn't give them what they want, he won't be speaker next week. If he does give them what they want, we're not going to get a deal. Government is going to shut down. And, of course, what then is your legacy other than, you know, you go down in history as one of the worst speakers that we've ever had. So where can he turn?
No, you're spot on. And look, I wished this for him. I wished heartburn and acid reflux, and I wished, you know, the crazy on him because it's what he wanted, and he's getting every bit of it.
Yeah, there are certain jobs that you just shouldn't want. I don't know what sane person would want to be Speaker of the House in this environment, but he wanted it, as you said, and now he has it. And last point, you know, I don't make so much of what is going to happen with regard to Dianne Feinstein's seat. Yeah, only in that, you know, whoever is picked, I mean, you know, we're already in the fall. You know, by early 2024, you know, nothing is going to get done much in the Senate. You know, I mean, let's face it, we're into election season. People are worried about getting reelected. So there isn't much public policy that's going to get done anyway. So whoever he picks, I don't think they'll make much of a difference. They'll go down as a footnote in the history book, but it's not as if they're going to play a major role. So it's important in California politics and who's going to hold that position in terms of the election that's coming up for that position. But, you know, their capacity to impact any public policy coming up, minimal.
Yeah, I'm with you. Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see where it all goes. And look, I don't want there to be a shutdown. There's nothing good in this other than, you know, as Steve pointed out, you know, never goes well for the people who do it. So maybe, maybe Bob's right. Maybe Republicans want to be in the minority. Maybe there's some of them that want to be in the minority so that, well, they can just cause trouble. It's so much easier being in the minority. It's so much easier to be a bomb thrower than actually having an agenda and a policy position. We'll see. I got to finish with, and again, I am now going to say the words Taylor and Swift back to back for the, again, another time, because Fox News now. Fox News evidently upset that during the football game that Taylor Swift went to watch her boyfriend play with his boyfriend's mother, with the boyfriend's mother. She evidently, you could see the lips move, and she used the F word, evidently. And Fox News, well, Fox News had a commentary for it. And, well, yeah, here's Fox News.
Here you have Taylor Swift, probably just met Travis Kelce's mom for the first time. They're at the game last week, and she's going, let's effing go, front of her.
But Travis Kelce said that everybody in the booth that she was sitting in, his family, everybody said that she was so lovely.
Lovely. Until, I'm sorry, if I heard that, and my son was dating a girl who has a mouth like a Teamster, that's it. Either way, this couple is already more annoying.
No offense to the Teamsters.
I'm not going to go where what I think of that as an actual Teamster. I'm not going to go where my mind originally went. But what is this fascination with these two? Now, again, I've been enjoying watching the incel crowd attack Travis Kelce, you know, trying to make him a beta, which is their word for some. I don't even know the words, to be honest, but try to make him, you know, less than manly. He's dating Taylor Swift. The two of them are like the power. I guess this is the power couple now. And when they break up, I'm sure she'll write a song about him, and it'll be number one. And I'm sure he'll sell more merchandise. I don't get this fascination. I don't get it. I know he advocated for, you know, the COVID vaccine. I know that he did a spot for Bud Light. I get it. I know she registered voters. You know, what is it that the right has that would keep this at the front of their minds? Now, understand, this is what they discussed as there's an impeachment inquiry and a government shutdown. This is breaking news in the F world. And not just because she said the F word. Well, I guess it was, partially. Wow. Help us. Help us turn off the F channel. And turn on the Rick Smith Show. Grab our podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Grab ours. Share it. Especially with people who...
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245C.